I'm Sam Peake. I'm the community officer, the outgoing community officer for the year from 2015 to 2016.
And as your kind of involvement with the SU, one of your roles is also to be chair of the Democratic Procedures Committee. Obviously, I think a lot That's of students right. might not be too clued up on not only what the Democratic Procedures Committee is, but also your role within that. So if you could just maybe explain that for us, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. So union democracy basically has a hierarchy. That hierarchy goes from a general meeting of all of the members under company law, then to a referendum, then to union council. And union council basically has various subcommittees almost within it. So you've got the main meeting of union council, which is debating normally substantive motions of policy. And then you've got committees which fall under union council, where effectively union council's delegated some of its responsibility to. So the procedural side of things, i.e. not the actual policies themselves, but the mechanisms by which the union's going to take decisions, that's decided at a committee called Democratic Procedures Committee, which, as you say, I've had the privilege to chair this year.
And kind of within that committee as chair, is it just very much people come with kind of motions, or do you set out an agenda for the day, or kind of how much power almost does a chair have within that committee?
My powers, such as they are to set the order of business for the committee. Any student can submit a motion to the committee. The committee itself is made up of elected students and two student officers, which are themselves elected. So it is an elected committee. You can hold it to account. Union Council should be holding that, committee to account, because it's a subcommittee of it. And my power as chair extends to making sure the meeting is facilitated in the right way and setting the order of business for the meeting.
So Union Council is probably quite almost a parliamentary kind of body in terms of its kind of lawmaking.
Yeah, I think if you were to think of it in terms of how Parliament works, in that Parliament is made up of the House of Commons, the House of Lords, the Queen, obviously, and various select committees and all parliamentary groups and that sort of thing. I think it would be equivalent to a select committee of Parliament. I think that would be a fair way of describing it.
And kind of looking back on the year, obviously, elections probably seems like quite a while away now, but there's still a kind of a note of dissatisfaction. What did you think of the elections and the electoral process generally this year?
I think the process resulted in I'm not going to pretend that the process is anything other than a tough, fastidious process. I do think that results in getting people who are going to have the qualities of resilience that you do need when you're an officer being scrutinised so much. But I do also think that there are possibly steps which we could take in future to make it a bit less daunting for people.
Mm. And in kind of looking at that dissatisfaction and kind of why maybe it might be slightly daunting for people in the future, this was kind of highlighted in the open letter that was put forward. What were your views on that? Kind of, obviously, it was written after the Union Council chair decided not to hear a motion about discussing electoral reform.
Yeah. So if I remember back to that time, what happened was that the motion put forward to Union Council, which I say is the chamber which debates substantive policy, was very procedural in nature. It ran to several pages. And you think about the meeting of Union Council being a 2-hour long meeting where we have a panel of randomly selected jurors who are made up of, ordinary students. For them to understand all the procedural intricacies in that motion, it would have taken basically the whole meeting. you know, even for them to have a chance of doing that. So what the facilitator of Union Council did, in my view, very correctly, was say that that motion should actually go towards another committee, be it Elections Committee, which is another subcommittee, or Democratic Procedures Committee, where that's necessary to, you know, potentially change some of the bylaws surrounding the elections process. Yeah, I think that was right.
In terms of referring it to the DPC and the EC, and you've talked about perhaps taking steps to make sure that the elections process is less daunting, I think people might be thinking that you're slightly running out of time. You know, there hasn't, I don't think, been given much, that you haven't given much priority to this discussion before. And now that it seems the kind of pressure is slightly building and we've only got a week left of term, you know, some of the people who are on these committees won't be around to make these decisions. You know, do you think you can get these, any meaningful change done in the last, you know, less than a week of term?
No, the change won't happen this week. It will be a rollover process. The student union does not cease to function. You know, during the summer holidays, we're all here still working, and there will be a new elections committee elected. They will carry forward some of the learning, I suspect, which has happened this year. I recently convened a meeting where we could hear all of the grievances of some of the people that, you know, signed that letter, as well as gain the experience of the incoming officers as how they found the elections process. So I think that opportunity has been there for people to input directly. Yeah, naturally, we've only got a week left of this academic year. You're right to point out that, therefore, decisions aren't going to be taken this academic year. But what I'm keen to stress is that the learning which has resulted from the elections process this year will not be lost, has been captured in writing, and will be a matter for, I suspect, a lot of discussion at Elections Committee next year, as will the composition and effectiveness of Elections Committee as a body in its own right.
Surely, though, a lot of the people who would care deeply about the change are also leaving this year and they're final year students. Why has there been such a delay over such a kind of high priority issue for students? You know, why wait until next year? Why not think, right, we need to get, you know, I mean, arguably that time slot is now gone, but why wasn't there maybe a greater impetus? I mean, in the meeting you spoke about, you put the wrong date on the meeting. You put the 31st of June rather than 31st of May. And so speaking to some of the SU candidates who would have liked to have been there, they weren't able, they thought the meeting was next month.
I'm sorry, I don't follow what you're
We saying. Had an email from Rachel Hoskins where you invited the SU candidates to this meeting to have a discussion. And of course, Rachel Hoskins and Emma Connors were there.
Yes.
When I spoke to Emily Mills, she pointed out that the email had the 31st of June for the date and not the 31st of May that you sent. And so I think there's probably a mix-up, and which is maybe why there are only two SU candidates there.
I don't know. You're telling me that for the first time, to be honest. If that is the case, then I'm more than happy for them to come in and chat with me about it. I'm always available. As I say, the meeting was held. There was a, I would say, disappointing attendance generally from people who signed the letter. But I think people should have people understood that the meeting was happening at that time, because indeed several people sent me their apologies for the fact they weren't able to make it. So, but you know, if there are individuals who think they've got points that they'd like to make, then by all means come and see me.
I mean, I can show you photographic evidence of the email that you sent, and it did say 31st June. I think lots of people read that and naturally assumed, obviously, that you meant the 31st of May. Well, but unfortunately, yeah. I think for a few people, they thought it was slightly odd that you were having this discussion a month later. But just, you know, if that came to me, I would have seen that. Do you not feel you made a administrative error when it came to this email?
Well, of course. I mean, of course there was an administrative error if the email said 31st of June and it said 31st of May. But I also think the email said, do get back to me by next week or something to that effect. So, yeah, I think people, understood when the meeting was. But if people want to come and make further points, then I'm more than happy for them to do so. Or they're more than welcome to write to me.
So we'll kind of move on from this and go to the DPC generally. And we were looking at some of the kind of minutes and stuff like that, and we found that often it seems that officers will get a certain priority when putting forward motions, and student motions will be pushed to the bottom.
I don't think that's a fair reflection at all. I mean, you've got the minutes in front of you, I assume.
We have an example, basically, where one motion was put forward by an officer that was
Which
talking
officer?
About... I think it was Ang Harris-Smith. I can get the minutes up and show you in a bit. But I think it was basically to the effect of talking about changing... I think the people in the studio over there will check for us now.
Get them to bring in.
It was basically... an officer put forward a motion about changing the name of student officer to student rep, and then a student-led motion, which was about democratic reform and engagement, was put forth on the agenda. And we thought something like democratic reform should maybe be given a bit more of a priority than something like changing a label, basically.
You're going to have to... Can someone perhaps bring me there? Because I can't really comment on things which... I don't really,
of course,
have
yeah.
in front of me. But I'm very happy to give you a comment and explain.
We'll move on from that question.
Yeah, and
searching it up, we'll come back to that. Do you think there's an issue maybe that talking about union council and stuff like that, that students aren't maybe aware of all these mechanisms that are in place? And perhaps if they're a little bit more aware, there would be much more engagement and kind of much bigger realization of how to get involved with student democracy.
Yes.
Do you think there's steps that, what steps do you think could be taken to get this awareness out there? And maybe why weren't these steps taken this year?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. One of the things which, I've done this year is ask our democracy coordinator, who is a paid member of staff to look at these things. She's produced a lengthy document. It runs to around 14 pages. Which I've seen, which basically comes up with a lot of proposals of how we're going to be publicising the democratic institutions of the union better. So as part of the review, which is looking at how the Portland building's going to look in future, that's part of what we're trying to say is how can we capture more that democracy is a big part of what your student union should be doing. So it's visible within the physical space of the building. I absolutely agree with that. We also need to be doing more advanced promotion of Union Council and Democratic Procedures Committee and Scrutiny Panel and all these important democratic meetings on our social media. We need to be promoting them through not just what the committee is, in a sense of what the committee is constitutionally, but actually what are the things which it's going to be discussing, because it's often the substantive items of business which are going to be more appealing to people to come in and listen to and engage with. We need to be making sure that members of who are representatives in their own right. So, for example, a committee member, of a society or group which might be particularly affected by the passing or not of a certain motion, that they're, they're called in and are engaging with it and actually invited into the meeting to give their view. I mean, at Democratic Procedures Committee, I think we've been more successful in doing this because when a motion, for example, we're ratifying a constitution of an associated union body or something, then we always have the president come in of that body and speak to that effect. But no doubt in other areas, for example, Union Council, we can be more effective at doing that. And I've, one of the things I've done this year is commission that piece of work to be done so that it can be taken forward next year as a matter of priority.
Right, Sam. So what we have here is the minutes for the Democratic Procedures meeting on the 28th of April this year. And then we have a list of proposals, of course, and then the agendas. We have motion one, which is changes to hall committee. I'll bring it around.
Yeah, bring that thing around there, laptop around there. Right. Would you like me to explain the agenda?
So, we have, just to explain it, we have motion one, presented by an officer, Ang Harrismith. We have motion 2, Elliot Denham, also an SU officer. We have motion 3, Dan Rattigan, an SU officer. We have motion 4, put forward by yourself, which is obviously an SU officer. And if you scroll down, we have motion 5, which is put forward by... put forward by Scott Jennings about the National Union of Student Delegates. And then we have changes to Union Council, also put forward by Scott Jennings, but it's greyed out, so I assume that meant you didn't have time to get there. Do you not think that something like that, presented also by a student, should maybe get a bit higher priority than some of the other motions put forward by officers there?
Okay, so let's go through that agenda then. So changes to Hall Committee Constitution is a motion standing Cameron Prentice's name, so he's not an officer. It was presented in lieu of his absence by Anne Harrod. That was a motion which had already been delayed by two committees. So in other words, it had been on the agenda of two previous committees and there hadn't been time to discuss it. So it was absolutely right that we discussed that one first, particularly as we'd obviously want to get changes to JCRs and Hall committees in effect before the start of the next academic year. Postgraduate rep on Hall committees was then included parallel to changes with Hall committees because that's specifically related to the motion. So that was effectively postgraduate reps and Hall committees, which was proposed by Elliot Denham, was a change which had to take effect within the main body of the Hall committee constitution. So therefore it made absolute sort of logical sense to hear the two things together. So that explains motions 1 or 2. Motion 3, to abolish the current school rep for the School of Life Sciences and replace it with 2 school reps for those positions. So that was effectively that I think the workload of these two, of the school rep for the School of Life Sciences, had become too much. And so all we needed to do was effect a quick change in the bylaws to the effect that rather than it being a school rep for the School of Life Sciences, we'll have one for neurosciences and biochemistry.
Surely, though, if it's,
so it's a two-second job.
If that's a quick change, you can put something like that at the end of the meeting where it's like, right, this will only take, you know, 2 minutes of your time, we do that. And then something like changes to Union Council should get a bit of a higher priority on the list.
My view is it's better to get the little things out of the way first, so then you've got time in the meeting to crack on with the good stuff. I mean, motion 4, update of names of associated bodies, we'd had some... Associated bodies are things like UNAD, which is our associated body over our Derby campus, and that just fallen out of date in the bylaws as to what we are calling that. So that then, all of those first 4 motions, I would suggest, probably took 20 minutes to crack through all of them. So then the 20 minutes, half an hour to crack through all of those 4 motions, and then the rest of the meeting. An hour and a half of the meeting, if you can believe, was dedicated to motion 5, which was the role of the National Union of Students in the bylaws of our student union, something which, in light of the NUS referendum, which has just happened, I think we were absolutely right to dedicate so much of the meeting to discussing that.
But surely this kind of also points to maybe a wider problem where you did have this backlog that you had to deal with the first motion, and that, you know, you only have, I think it's 3 or 4 meetings for DPC, isn't it, in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And surely, you know, you have to make the time for motions like this. And, you know, unfortunately, we're running out of time this year. It's unlikely, I guess, that we'll see another DPC meeting this year. Surely this points to a wider problem that if things were processed quicker and there wasn't such this backlog, then student motions would get more time.
Yes. If there wasn't a backlog to clear, then that would be so. But there is a backlog to clear. And it is... If a lot of those motions were generated, just to explain, by... the passing of one referendum in election period 3, and that basically created five motions for DPC to consider. So DPC was on track with its business as such. It didn't have a backlog until a referendum was passed during the third election period, which is the officer election period. You may remember logging on and voting, and there was a question which said, you know, should your SU officers be more accountable? Which, you know, is obviously a question to which the obvious answer is yes. The actual motion itself contained four or five pages long, I believe, in terms of detailed procedural rules for the union to enact, and that's what's created a backlog of agenda items needed to be discussed at DPC.
And so, with this backlog, why aren't there more meetings? Do you feel that maybe there's a certain element of administration and bureaucracy that sometimes gets in the way of real change? For example, in that union council meeting where the union council chair decided not to hear the motion about electoral reform, they also ran out of time to hear a motion about setting up another union council meeting.
No, they didn't.
I think, are we sure on that?
Yeah. What happened was the union council was held very close to exam time. And so, just to explain how it works, you need a minimum of 16 jurors to make what you call core decisions at union council, i.e. decisions which can actually be taken into effect. And we had 15. So the meeting was delayed for about 15 minutes while we were waiting for the 16th guy to turn up. And he didn't, which is unfortunate, given we invite 20 people. So actually 5 people that said they were going to turn up, which didn't, which is, you know, a shame. So we could have cancelled the whole meeting, but we didn't want to do that. I particularly didn't want to do that. I said, right, no, what we'll do is we'll think on our feet and we'll hold a meeting which will be a sub-core at refer meeting, but the minutes of which can be ratified at the first union council of next year. What obviously a sub-core at meeting couldn't do is decide that it was going to have another meeting because it didn't have the chorusy level to do that, if you see what I mean. So that's why that agenda item was voluntarily removed by the proposer of it. It's democratic tennis in a way and gymnastics, but that was just, you know, the unfortunate situation we were in.
Isn't the kind of the problem that you highlight there with kind of, you know, 5 people not turning up? Isn't there a case maybe for a bit more? You know, obviously you did take a proactive decision to kind of think on your feet, but, you know, like I said, a lot of the people who wanted that union council meeting to happen later this year won't be here next year to see the changes. And so do you not think that maybe without the student pressure, there'll be less inclination to change?
I think people recognise that there are certain things around the elections process that need to improve. The way we deal with grievances needs to get better, needs to be more efficient. We need an elections committee which is able to be more responsive during the elections process to complaints as they come in. We need complaints, actually, to be coming in during the election cycle itself, not on the final hours of the final day, when in reality it's very difficult to do anything about it, of course, because the election's happened. So we need that education as well as to what the powers of elections committee are, what the remit of elections committee is. So I absolutely don't think that these weaknesses, which were identified, I think, correctly in some respects by the candidates, is going to be lost. Because I know in myself that, you know, I've been carrying forward those discussions internally and that's been happening, and that next year, you know, this isn't going to be lost, because next year elections committee is going to meet again, we're going to make greater use of hopefully of technology, so to facilitate an elections committee which is, you know, able to not necessarily have to be all physically present in a room, which is obviously quite difficult for students, but can, you know, take decisions electronically, that sort of thing. I think that will all help a more streamlined and responsive process during the election period.
Yeah, getting onto the subject of grievances, we spoke to a couple of candidates and there was a general feel that there wasn't a very clear chain of events once they submitted their grievances. Obviously, like you said, some of them were submitted too late and they couldn't be dealt with. But, you know, we also have kind of people who went, you know, handed in agreements, and then maybe they felt, you know, they even submitted, you know, physical evidence. It was very kind of, look, I have physical evidence of this person doing physical campaigning before the, you know, start date or whatever. And although they maybe heard later that there maybe was some action, there was no clear, right, this is what your grievance form has resulted in. You know, will that be something that will, hopefully be taken into greater clarification next year?
Absolutely. It's vital that they're able to give that feedback on a more ongoing basis during the elections. That's absolutely a priority.
I think a slightly more disturbing story we heard as well was Jess Salisbury, the SU presidential candidate, going to Rob Jennings in tears, basically, over what happened that day. And he told her something along the lines of, what do you expect me to do about it? And we felt maybe that as chair of elections committee, he's the one person who could have at least said, right, we'll take this to a committee, or we'll, I can show you how to, you know, do this or whatever.
I don't know. I wasn't there for that that conversation. I don't know what happened there. All I can say is that campaigning's a difficult job. It is, and it's a stressful job, and I remember that all too well. But actually, I know, you know, having seen, you know, Rob try and coordinate the process as obviously being chair of elections committee, deputy returning officer for the process, that is actually a stressful job as well, and you're often called upon to make instant decisions without necessarily all the guiding infrastructure around you as to what procedures and processes you should be following in order to make those decisions, and what your powers are as the deputy returning officer. So I think we are going to need to, as I say, I'm very aware the union as a body is very cognizant of the fact that we need to improve the elections committee processes in general in time for next year, and we will do.
So, I mean, just last week, the Elections Committee had a meeting that Rob Jennings wasn't present at because he was putting up decorations, and then Sarah Pickup was chairing the meeting, but then she had to leave for a very important finance meeting. And then apparently we had only one student who was meant to be dealing with some very heavyweight issues of, you know, doing about all the NUS campaign stuff. You know, do you think Rob Jennings is maybe kind of, do you not think there was a certain level of priority given to putting up decorations versus to chairing an elections committee meeting?
Well, Rob's the activities officer, and he has a responsibility to make sure that graduation ball, which is a big event attended by thousands of students.
I mean, that sounds like something you can delegate, though.
Well, okay. But Rob still has that responsibility as well. Sarah sits on reporting and finance committee of the student union, which is a governance meeting which has delegated authority from the trustee board to look at, you know, the make sure the the student union finances, which we all depend on, every society and student group depends on, are in good health. So those were, I think, important things to be doing as well. Obviously that is again part of the problem of elections committee, is that there were a lot of, you know, substantive items of business which came at the last minute which did need to be dealt with.
No, I agree. I think Sarah Pickup's meeting did sound, you know, obviously she has to attend that, but I think one of the things that was also raised was that Rob gave her little to no information about what she had to be dealing with as well, and so, you know, probably valuable time was wasted, you know, because she had to be there for a short time. Valuable time is probably wasted trying to update her. Do you not think that maybe also Rob could have at least thought, right, you know, here's what's been going on, here's what you need to sort out?
Well, I think Rob did brief Sarah on some of the you know, conversations he'd had with the NUS campaigners. But obviously I accept that, you know, Rob is the deputy returning officer. It was, you know, far from ideal that he wasn't there.
Do you think the problem could maybe be solved if there was more of a, being more considerate with responsibilities that each officer got? You know, you're chair of Democrat procedures. I mean, maybe it would have been better suited for you if, you know, maybe if you had someone else who could also, you know, chair when you weren't there. Maybe it would have been better for Rob as well if he had a, you know, a couple more people. I mean, does every single SU officer, you know, Dan Ratigan, could he not have stepped in for this, or could he not have been also a kind of deputy chair, as it were?
Sadly not, because the way it works is at the start of the year, you know, the elections committees, its membership is itself defined in a constitutional document. And there is a very good reason that only two officers are allowed to sit on elections committee, and it's the fact that officers themselves need to be held to account by these democratic committees, and as such they shouldn't have a majority on them, although they may have a good insight to bring to bear to the committees.
Do you think there's enough officer accountability generally? Because I mean, for us picking up this story, it's something that we've only discovered maybe these faults in the system, as it were, in the last couple of months, and this kind of lack of awareness maybe slightly breeds a certain is, like you said, with only, you know, five members not turning up to the Union Council, which is also meant to kind of be there as a degree of accountability. If there was better student engagement, you know, should officers therefore be held more accountable in that way?
Yeah, I think that's a fair reflection. I mean, we are, I would suggest, held to account in a more thorough way than is the case in many other student unions. So if you go back to what I was saying earlier, at lots of other student unions, they would just have a union council. That would be their one democratic meeting. And they would try and do everything there. So debate substantive items of policy, debate procedures, and hold officers to account. Here, we devolve those functions off. And I've already talked about DPC. Another subcommittee of Union Council is the Scrutiny Panel, which obviously is a committee, again, of elected students, to which I, as an officer, have to submit a written report. You can see that report. It's published online. It runs to over 20 pages. And you can read what I've been doing for the year, and I'd encourage people to do so if they've got some spare time. But I think, you know, in all seriousness, we do rely especially on our media groups to provide perhaps a scrutiny of officers which is slightly more succinct than the you know, lengthy documents which I have to go and explain in an oral hearing before Scrutiny Panel, which is a valuable process of detailed scrutiny,
but maybe not one that students find attractive,
but which we need to marry up, I think, with you know, engagement with, you know, groups like URN and Impact and NSTV to make sure that they're also able to play their role in scrutinizing officers, because the scrutiny of us is very important. We hold power, but we do so on your behalf, and we should be accountable to you, the students.
There's one thing in regards to Scrutiny Panel that I'd actually just like your clarification on, because so the Union Council chair is also the Scrutiny Panel facilitator.
That is correct.
Yeah. And does that mean that the facilitator, what are their powers? So as in, if I was a member of the Scrutiny Panel, I mean, if I have a facilitator, does that mean that if I have a question, the facilitator can say, actually, we're not asking that today? Is that one of the powers, or is it just very much
No, kind
of administrative role, or I'm not quite sure.
Their job is to chair the meeting, and to make sure, you know, that, yeah, the meeting runs to time and that sort of thing, because it's a public meeting and it's kept to 2 hours to try and make it more attractive to students to come and see us. So that's their job, is to keep the meeting to time. Their job is, and to facilitate the scrutineers to come up with the scoring process for each officer, because we get given a mark out of 10 at the end of each meeting. That's their job. Their job is not to be telling, you know, elected students what they can and can't ask. That would be quite wrong.
Okay. Also in regards, we talked just a little bit earlier about the decision not to hear the motion, and you wrote a reply to the open letter as well, in which you kind of stated your reasons.
I tried to explain.
Well, explain the reasoning behind the Union Council chair's
head. Yeah.
And One of those was about the 400 word limit, which is on a about that you can put forward on a motion.
Yeah, and it's in a guidance document that you can have.
In a guidance document,
a motion under 400 words always goes, can go to Union Council, and if it's above 400 words, the chair has a power to, you know, pass it on to another committee.
One member of the kind of a very active member of the SU said that he hasn't seen that power used in 3 years, in his 3 years at university, and this is the first time. Do we not think there's something slightly odd about, not only is an unelected and unaccountable member deciding whether or not the Union Council should hear a motion about electoral reform, but also the fact that the bylaw itself is maybe slightly outdated?
No, I don't think so. I think the fact that I know the person you're thinking about instantly because we've spoken about this. I think the fact that a power has not been used, or a discretion to use a power hasn't been exercised in 3 years, which may or may not be the case, I don't know the history, doesn't mean that the power isn't valid. So that's one thing. And doesn't mean that, just because you might have been doing something wrong for 3 years by not using the power, doesn't mean that you shouldn't use it now, if that is the case. It's very interesting, we were talking earlier about the balance between, democratic procedural stuff and substantive, agenda items, and the fact that we want to get people along to these democratic meetings. Now, I would suggest to you that if you want to get people along to a meeting and encourage students to participate in this process of union democracy, you need to make the meeting exciting. And with all respect to hacks like myself who like talking about union procedures, that ain't going to be the case for the majority. Majority of people are going to want to come and talk about interesting things like no platforming or prevent or any of the other, should the union divest from fossil fuels or any of the other things which we've discussed at Union Council this year. And I think if you keep the Union Council agenda items to those interesting, substantive,
But surely something like elections is very interesting to people. We've seen a student interest there. Surely it should have been, there should have been a degree of, right, there is an interest here. Although maybe, yes, it's more suitable for other committees. Clearly, a student's brought this.
Sure.
And there is a significant interest, and people, I think, were interested in that.
I agree with you, people were interested. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with bringing a motion to Union Council, which is about the elections process. What I think is more difficult is when that motion itself runs to pages and pages of procedural instruction, basically, to the subcommittees. And Democratic Procedures Committee, for example, which, as you alluded to earlier, I'm the chair of, exists in order that it can do this detailed scrutiny. But it is a subcommittee of Union Council. So if Union Council makes a decision that all of these procedural rules need to be enacted, then that fetters the discretion of the Democratic Procedures Committee, which is also made up of elected students who are, have greater expertise in union democracy, to actually make informed decisions. And indeed, it was very interesting when we held the meeting which you attended the other day with some of the candidates who'd signed the letter to me on Impact, or not the letter to me, but the letter to the student union on Impact, saying we were wrong to, pass this meeting on to one of the other, subcommittees of Union Council. They actually, when they read the motion, didn't agree with lots of the procedural things which were being proposed.
I think that there was a certain element there of very short notice in terms of when they could, it was just Scott Jennings who was writing the motion. It wasn't a collaborative effort of 20 people. And obviously they felt that some of the motions that Scott, who probably arguably felt hard done by the 6-vote loss, there was obviously things that they weren't clear about. But I still think,
which is why we were right to give it more time to be discussed and debated.
But I still think there's an issue in the fact that for a decision you make, you're right, I can hold you to account for a scrutiny panel, but for a decision which basically ensured that there would be no discussion in Union Council about electoral reform this year, it was made by someone who is unaccountable and also unelected.
I think that is, well, they weren't unaccountable in the sense that we're talking about it now.
You know, but I can't remove them from office through whatever. At least I don't think so.
I'm trying to think whether you can or not. I don't think you can, because they're, as you say, a student. Let's just get this in perspective. They're a student themselves who is, I think, getting paid a small amount, but basically they're doing a job because they really care about union democracy and want to make the best decisions that they possibly can. So we talk about unelected bureaucrats and things like that. We need to remember who we're talking about. We're talking about people.
I just feel
like
maybe
you and
that
me.
There's a slight issue in that for something that is, you know, a cornerstone of democracy like elections, that it is that these decisions are being handed over. Although, you know, I accept, obviously, it's not some kind of mysterious figure I know nothing about as a student who obviously is engaged with a democratic process. I just think, you know, it's also harder to put, you know, a face to these people than it is obviously with student officers.
Well, that's true to a point, but I saw the facilitator of Union Council go through a process where she read all of the governing documents very, very closely and cared very deeply about the decision she made and the importance of getting it correct. So I have no doubt of her ability to continue to do a good job in that role. Should there be a mechanism by which Union Council itself, you know, can hold its chair to account? Possibly. It doesn't exist at the moment. We're happy to look at it if people want to go down that route. As I know the person, you know, who you spoke about when you asked the initial question would like to happen. I'm happy to discuss that with him, and I have done.
He did. I think he did email you about a month ago with motions for reform. And do you feel that, you know, have you read his motions? Is there going to be a kind of reply to that we can see?
Yeah. Well, it's not for me to reply because it's ultimately something which Democratic Procedures Committee needs to reply to. All I can say is that we've received it. It will go to Democratic Procedures Committee, you know, probably the first meeting of next year.
Right. And I think a lot of the issues that we've touched on in this interview, you know, with the kind of, do you not think that if there's more advertisement for the meetings, you know, you talked about the document that was published. We were only able to...
Which document?
The document that kind of, that you asked the democracy coordinator to write about, kind of showing what all the SU kind of democracy institutions do. Or is that different?
The report that I have asked for on improvements to union democracy is currently an internal document. You might be thinking of a different document.
Yeah,
on the SU website.
They have kind of links to all this stuff. And I just think, you know, we were only able to kind of, only came to our attention really when we started emailing people like Leilani, and she was able to say, right, this is what all these things do. And there was a bit more clarification, you know. There isn't maybe sometimes a members list of all the Union Council, but kind of elections committee and stuff like that. There isn't minutes for elections. And I think one of the, you know, I think this is a issue, you know, we talked about kind of the sometimes slight dreariness of union bylaws that not everyone wants to get involved in. But when it comes to kind of a broader issue of democracy, I think students would be very interested. And maybe there's I definitely think there is a case for more advertisement of these things, more advertisement that you can run, because we didn't know you could run for a place on these scrutiny panels, that it is open to everyone. And I think, you know, students would be much more inclined to get involved if there was a feeling of, right, these democratic panels don't operate above me. They're actually something which I can do in my everyday capacity.
And I agree with you. We need to be advertising these positions more. But I'll ask you a question. When the student union sends you an email, do you always open it?
I don't, no.
And if we sent you more emails on a sort of weekly basis, would you be more or less inclined to open them?
But do you not think maybe...
It's an interesting question, isn't it?
You know, I'm saying that there's
different... Would you be more or less inclined if we sent you more emails?
Different routes of advertisement. You know, you could put this up on the TV screens that we have in Portland. I agree with you. Spam in your email isn't good. But I think, you know, if you look at one route of advertisement, which is the emails, which you have access to everyone, but you also have visual access to everyone. We also have, you know, You know, you have the whole board outside the student offices, which shows all the people who are on, who are your student officers.
Yeah.
You know, there's also space for you to put up, right, this is where you should get involved. You can put it up on the TV screens. I think, obviously, yeah, emails, maybe they're not the best route of communication. And I think everyone is, of course, guilty of neglecting their student email sometimes. But I think, you know, there needs to be, or maybe, you know, for kind of at least something to be taken note of next year,
yeah,
that advertisement for democracy needs to be kind of planted at the core of stuff like Welcome Week as well.
Well, what I would say to you is watch this space, because I'm aware of the need to promote democracy more physically within the building. On our website, which generally needs to be improved, I think we'd all agree with that. And that's going to be done, you know. And via social media. But, you know, I think that we need to get, there's a balance in terms of the volume of communication you can receive from your student union, and what you're actually going to read and open and listen to, which we need to get right as well.
Definitely. Just as our final question, would it be fair to say that, in short, these committees just don't have enough time to deal with the magnitude of issues that come this way, particularly this year?
I think that's an interesting question. Are you referring to the fact that there's a backlog of DPC motions in specific terms there?
Backlog, you know, Rob obviously not being able to meet all the elections committees, you know, the fact that Union Council, you know, arguably they were sub-quorum, of course, but, you know, the decision to not have a Union Council meeting, kind of if there were, you know, if there was a kind of improvement of the system, they would be able to deal with things better.
There's a problem generally with democracy, I would suggest, and that needs to be, you know, addressed as a priority. You know, I think generally the structures are quite good, but the engagement with them and how we do that and the promotion around that can be much better. And that is something that we are actively looking at. The reason we have the structures is to prevent, a backlog like which has occurred at Democratic Procedures Committee. That backlog has occurred because the committee has suddenly found, you know, that it has got a lot of work given to it as a result of a referendum. A referendum which is quite a, if I could put it, binary tool for determining actually some quite intricate procedural stuff. And I think that's possibly an earlier fault in terms of should that business have come directly to Democratic Procedures Committee. But look, these are interesting, yeah, detailed points. I think the broader point about the promotion of democracy needing to be improved is absolutely right, and you know, I'm glad that URN are highlighting that, because I think it's important to be taken forward next year as well.